Welcome to season 26 of the Follow My Lead podcast, where each week I bring you stories and best practices of today's leaders to help you on your leadership journey. My name is John Eads. Here we go. Welcome back. Another week to learn and grow and develop and get better. And that's exactly what we're going to do this week with my friend, Jason Romano. This conversation's just deep and loaded. A bunch of good information. Before we get there, I have an invitation, a free invitation. I am speaking Tuesday night, August 4th at 7 o'clock p.m. for Ignite Charlotte. This is a free event. Going virtual this year, and we're going to share 5 minutes. We will come on at about 7:50 p.m. to do our part for the talk. But I need you to show up. We got to show these people what the Follow My Lead podcast listeners are all about. Go to Ignite Charlotte on Facebook. Ignite Charlotte on Facebook. And register for the free event. Show up. Show your support. Use the chat. I want to know you're there. It's a great opportunity to shed some light and share some ideas to help inspire people during this difficult time. And I want you to show up. So go to Ignite Charlotte on Facebook or just search Ignite Charlotte on Google and you'll find it. Sign up, be there for me, be there to support us. Let's show up. Let's go, baby. Now this week's conversation with my friend Jason Romano is just wonderful. This is a man that worked for ESPN for many years. He wrote his first book was all about a real traumatic upbringing with an alcoholic father and to write about that event. And so this is just one of these things that I want. It's got a bunch of heavy stuff in it, but it's just wonderful. If you'll lock and load during this episode, you'll grow and develop. We talk mentorship. We talk about career pivots. We talk about faith in the workplace. It's just got everything in it. So without further ado, here's my really good friend and author of a new book called The Uniform of Leadership, Mr. Jason Romano. Well, Jason, welcome to the show.
John, so good to be with you, buddy. Thanks for having me.
We have a common connection and a man named John Gordon. And I want you to talk about how important it is to have someone that didn't know you so well at some point, but they've continued to pour into you and help you just like John did for me. Forget John for a second. How important it is for people to have others like that in their walk?
It's vital. I mean, we all need mentors. We all need people. I look at it from a biblical perspective, like the biblical characters of Paul and Barnabas and Timothy. We all need Barnabases in our life as Paul had. And that's kind of a person that you can confide in, a good buddy, a close friend, an accountability partner. And then we all need Timothys, people we can pour into. But then we are all that Timothy as well. And we need Paul in our life. We need somebody above us or who's a little more experienced to pour into us. And it's vital, man. I mean, the problem is, or the hard part of that is finding who those people are. And, you know, we like to look in our inner circle and start there. But even in our inner circle, sometimes those people might be friends of yours, close friends, but they might not be the people that you turn to in times of crisis or turn to for advice on whether or not you want to leave your dream job at ESPN like I did. Like, you need people in different walks. John Gordon, you mentioned him, became one of those people for me because I just simply reached out to him and said, can I get 30 minutes of your time and just talk to you and ask you a couple questions? And I was not expecting that to turn into this friendship and this mentorship and relationship that I have with him now. But we can all do that. Like, I tell young people, relationship, relationship, relationship. Like, that is the key in business. That is the key in life. And there is no excuse today to not find mentors or people that you want to connect with. Not everybody's going to become your best friend, but you can pretty much get a hold of everybody through social media or try to get a hold of them. And then it's up to them if they respond. And John could have easily not responded to me. So to me, it's vital. It helped me on a spiritual level. It helped me on a professional level. It helps me from a level of where God has placed me today as a speaker and as an author. Like, that's what John does. I didn't do any of that 4 years ago. I hadn't had my book out yet. I really hadn't spoken much publicly. And so John really helped guide me in a lot of different ways.
Your walk's been interesting. Your the first book you wrote primarily about your dad and some of the things that happened in his walk with alcoholism. For people that aren't familiar with you or your work, talk through the choice to write that book and why was that on your heart at that time?
It's a great question, John, because honestly, I never had it pinned on a wall, you know, growing up that I wanted to be an author. And certainly the first book that I would ever write would have been me pouring out my soul about my broken relationship with my alcoholic father. Like, that's not something that you have planned when you're thinking about goals and achievements and things you want to go strive for. It's so weird to call myself an author, and I get because you have two books, you're an author, but I just never wanted to do this. I never wanted to be a writer. But I spoke for the first time, you mentioned speaking, in 2015 to my church here in Connecticut. And my pastor asked me to speak, and he said, "You can speak on anything you want." And I said, "Forgiveness. Okay, that's where I'm going." And for the first time publicly in an audience setting like that, certainly from a pulpit at a church, I shared about my dad's story and my story and our struggle for many years in a very confusing relationship for a man who drank for 40 years, struggled mightily with alcoholism, eventually struggled with depression as well, and just did not live a real great life. And for me, that wasn't the model that any person deserves to have as a father. But for me, I walked through 40 years of trying to understand his side of it and coming to a place of forgiving him for the hurt that he caused me. So I share this story. All of these people come up after I share it at church, and they come up to me and say, "Listen, what you just shared was so powerful." And I'm like, "Well, thank you." And they're like, "No, you don't understand. What you just shared is my story. I struggle forgiving this person for hurting me, my dad, my mom, my sister, my brother, my aunt, whoever." And some of those stories that people shared with me were very personal and much more, to me at least, much more powerful than my story. We're talking about sexual abuse. We're talking about some really terrible things that happened to some people, and they're struggling with forgiving. And I'm like, "Well, I just had a dad who drank too much, and like, who am I?" But as I told other people about this story, a good friend of mine who's a pastor out in California and I were talking. I was still working at ESPN at the time, and he said, "I heard your sermon that you shared at your church on forgiveness, and dude, you need to write a book because there's a lot of layers to your story and it can really help a lot of people." And I said, "No, thanks. I'm good." Like, I don't want to write a book. Writing a book's hard, and I'm not a great writer. I really believe that. If I'm considered a great writer, it's all because of my co-author, Steve Copeland, who has helped me craft both of my books that I've written. But he said, "No, it's not about how good of a writer you are. It's about the story that you need to tell, because if it can help other people, you need to tell it." So I said, "All right, well, how do you do that?" We go through the process, and long story short, I get hooked up with a publisher at the end of August of 2016. We spend about a year writing this book. It was hard to write this book. It's called Live to Forgive, Moving Forward When Those We Love Hurt Us. And it was really, really difficult revisiting some of the things that I went through as a child, as a teenager, even to my young adulthood, things that I hadn't thought about in a long time, things that I had to kind of get confirmation on from my brother, from my dad. I'd say, "This is how it happened, right?" Because I want to make sure that the stories I'm telling weren't just, you know, memories, but they were actually what happened, you know, because it's easy to just write some stuff down and think it happened that way. But I had to go to my dad and ask him about some of those terrible times. And he confirmed just about all of them, my mom too. And so, yeah, it was really hard to write. But I will say, my dad gave me permission to write this book. I would not have written it without his permission. We are reconciled now, and I've come to forgive him, obviously. And he said, "Jason,
let's hope if you write the book, Learn to Forgive, you learn to forgive him."
It would have been bad if I wrote a book about forgiveness and had not yet forgive my father. That would have been bad. That would have been bad, John. But I will say, my dad came to me when I told him about the idea, and I said, "Listen, if I write this, I got to be as open, transparent, and vulnerable as possible. I need to be as real as possible, as raw as possible in writing this. And that means putting you, I'm painting you in a very bad light. I said, in a lot of this book, you're the villain in essence. And he said, Jason, if one person can be helped by all of the crap that we went through and all of the hardship that I've walked through for my 60 plus years of life, he's like, you got to write it. Cause I, even for him, even though it was my story, he felt like his life had served a purpose now because of the story that I was writing. And so he really felt that way. And it's probably the most mature answer he's ever given me on anything we've ever talked about. And he said, please go write this book. And so I got his permission, certainly talked to my family, and there we go. Lord, Live to Forgive came out January of 2018. And it's crazy.
Well, that's good. And I appreciate you sharing the story. There's a place that you've had kind of a unique lens on, which is for many years at ESPN, you were not behind the microphone. You're on the other side of the glass.
Producing, I was a producer. Right? Yeah.
And in this particular case, writing the first book and now the second book, doing the podcast now and all the things that you do, you've made a transition from behind the glass to behind the microphone. That's a big transition for a lot of people. And I think a lot of people out there have dreams or aspire to not be the people that they watch on social media, but the people that are actually producing the content that so many have the courage to do. Walk me through that transition for you, what it's been like. And then if you think to some of the things that have helped you make that transition, what encouragement or advice would you give to someone trying to do it?
So 21-year-old Jason wanted to do what 45-year-old Jason was able to do, which was be a host of a sports show. But 21-year-old Jason didn't get that opportunity until I was whatever it was, 43 years old. So it's being patient. I will say leaving ESPN to go do what I'm doing at Sports Spectrum, you know, a lot of what I do at Sports Spectrum now is what I did at ESPN. I'm producing, I'm booking guests, I'm editing, I'm, you know, finding, the right conversations to facilitate. All of that I did at ESPN on one plane or another. And I did social media at ESPN for many years, so I'm doing that now. So a lot of the work I'm doing now is still just a branch off of where I was at ESPN. The difference is now I'm, like you said, hosting a show. And that was the scariest part of all this, I guess, other than taking a 40% pay cut and leaving, you know, your dream job at ESPN to go into a ministry. You know, that's scary in its own right. But could I actually do this? Could I host a show?
There's a C.S. Lewis quote where he says, comparison is the thief of joy. And,
yes,
you know, you wonder if early on we start to believe things about ourselves or what we're capable of or not capable of, because this person's 25 years, 35 years, 45 years later in their journey, and you just assume you're not good enough because of it. And I think we're all guilty of that in some ways, right? And to see that you stayed in the business long enough to realize that you can do it and you can do it well and you're going to keep getting better at it. And it'll be great to see where you are at 55. But I want so many of our listeners to think about that. Wherever you are in your journey, let's not just make an assumption that you can't do something because somebody else is good at it that's been at it a lot longer than you. And I think it's a powerful lesson for us all to really think about, because go ahead.
I was going to say, I didn't mean to cut you off, John, but I always tell people, especially young people, I've had a lot of young people, especially when I was at ESPN, come up to me and say, how did you get to where you got to? What advice do you have? Get that a lot. Even today, I still get that a lot. My advice is this: what are you good at and what are you passionate about? Try to find those two things and intersect them. That's the sweet spot, as I call it. You know, I talk about a sweet spot out of baseball, and it's this perfect spot, right? Where you hit the ball or where you hold the ball or whatever, the sweet spot to sign an autograph. The sweet spot of your journey into whatever vocation you want to go into for me is, what are you passionate about and what are you good at? And I think the good at part is the tough one, because I was not good at being on air, at least in my eyes, at 23, but I thought I was good at being a producer, and man, was I passionate about sports and radio and broadcasting. And so that was my sweet spot. Now I'm still passionate about it, but I think as I've done this now, I've done 500 and 25 interviews or something like that at Sports Spectrum. Now I think I'm much better, certainly, than I was 3 years ago.
Right.
But 22 years ago or whatever it is, I wasn't, my sweet spot was not what I was good at and being passionate about as far as being on air, if that makes sense. Now, I could have had this passion, because a lot of people have passions for things, I think, but maybe they're just not good at it. And some things you just can't work at and get better at it. Some things you're just blessed with an innate ability to do something, right? But you can work at it. And sometimes when you work at, you know, I see a lot of baseball players, man, they're working their butts off for years and years and years in the minor leagues, and they never get their shot at the majors. And does that mean they weren't good at baseball? No, but they work at it. And sometimes you just don't get to where, you know, you want to ultimately get to. And so could I have hosted a radio show in Paducah, Kentucky, and stayed there for 20 years and done that when I came out of college? You know, but God takes you in different paths and different directions. And for me, it went from working at WGY to going to ESPN. And if I wanted to go to ESPN, I don't think I could have ever gotten there, at least especially early on, as an on-air guy. Mm. And then who knows where my journey would have went to. Now, the reason I can do what I'm doing now is because I worked at ESPN, because I was around Bob Lee and Stuart Scott and Mike Greenberg and Mike Golic and some of the amazing people, Chris Berman, that are on ESPN. And I watched how they did their job. And certainly there's osmosis there. Like, you just watch and you learn. Right. And now I still look at myself when I interview people on my show and I hear some of the things that those guys did when I was around them for so many years. Little things, just subtle things that you wouldn't even know. I do now because I heard Bob Lee do that for 9 years on Outside the Lines at ESPN when he would interview somebody. And sure, so those fantastic. Are just things that you learn. Right. But I don't think I'm any good at it, but it's just stuff I learned, you know, and it's how, you know, Tony Gwynn once said Ted Williams showed him how to hit a baseball and just hold his hands just right as he turned it and he swung and it swung the bat. And he said that made the biggest difference in the world. And so sometimes, and Bob wasn't teaching me how to be an interviewer. I wasn't saying, Bob, tell me how you interview this person and that. I was just watching him and I learned. And thankfully it's helped. You know, if I wasn't around ESPN and all that, I wouldn't be able to do what I'm doing now.
Yeah. Well, it's good. And I appreciate you talking about it. Before we get into the book, there's a question that I think is probably I know it's on a lot of people's mind, which is this intersection, about bringing your faith to work. Okay. And specifically, you know, you talk a little bit about a story with Tony Dungy in your new book. And I think a lot of professionals are actually struggling with how to do it. What place does it have at work? What place doesn't it have? And I think you wrote about how Tony Dungy asked you, how do you live out your faith at ESPN? So your initial thoughts or reactions to that heavy question of, what place does faith have at the workplace, and how should professionals think about that? Should they leave it behind? Should they take it with them? Thoughts?
I think people of faith will relate to this a lot more than people who aren't of faith. And I'm not saying that people who aren't of faith won't understand here, but for me, my faith is the most important thing to me. And what I didn't get for 8 years working at ESPN until Tony Dungy said that, really 10 years, was I was an ESPN producer for 9 years, 10 years, who happened to be a Christian. After that day, I was a Christian who happened to work at ESPN. So for me, it was just switching the roles, switching the orders and how I viewed my journey and how I view the purpose that I felt like God had for me into working at ESPN. For many years, I was so focused on doing the job well and climbing the corporate ladder. And again, things that's not bad in itself, but my real true purpose on this earth is to love God and love people. Those are the two greatest commandments. And for me, that goes with me wherever I go. And so I understand when bosses or people in charge are like, keep religion out of this. I get it. I get that. You know, I'm not hired to walk around ESPN with a Bible wear a cross and tell people to repent every day when I walk by them. Like, that's not how I was wired to do. That's not what I was hired to do. And I would have gotten fired if I did that, by the way.
Right.
Really, really quick. I was hired to be a producer and produce sports content at ESPN. And so that's what I'm hired to do. That's the job I got to do. However, relationship, relationship, relationships, right? It goes back to that. And the more that you spend time around people, and you probably spend more time around people at work than you do anywhere else, outside of maybe your family. But for me, even I was spending more time at ESPN than I was with my family, just being truthful here, for many, many years. You're going to have to get to know these people on a deeper level if you want to build relationships. You just have to, right? And so through that, opportunities for me to live out my faith came through those relationships, right? It came through talking to people and saying, hey, what do you do? What's the most important thing in your life? Tell me about your faith and your family or whatever. And so I'm getting to know people on a deeper level, and they're asking me too. And that gives me an opportunity to talk about my faith. Again, I'm not bringing my faith into the workplace by handing people Bibles every day, but we're being intentional about understanding who I am as a follower of Christ and who I am as a person who at the time was working at ESPN. And so what does that look like? Well, that's what the uniform of leadership, the new book, is about, is wearing that uniform properly. For me, it's going to ESPN and understanding that myself needs to be put third here in the pecking order of what I'm doing. And what needs to be first is my relationship with God, but then serving others. Serving others. And when you understand that it's not about you, it's about others, how you can impact others. You know, my definition of true success is the impact that you left on other people's lives. It's not about how much you accomplished. It's not about how many Emmy Awards you have or World Series rings or how much money you made or what title status that you achieved or, you know, how many Grammy Awards that you win because you're a musician or Oscars because you're a movie star. Although we place that title on people, you know, when I interview a NFL player and he's won 3 Super Bowls, I say, welcome to three-time Super Bowl champion XYZ. And so I give them that title already, but that's not what makes them successful. What makes them successful is the imprint and the impact that they left on other people's lives. And when I got that aspect of life going to work at ESPN every day, everything changed, because suddenly people are saying, why are you so focused on other people? Why are you the one who's not conforming to the patterns that everybody else is conforming to? Why are you not out partying every night? Why are you not cursing every single second? Why am I not hearing all this bad language come out of your mouth? Now it has an open door to talk about why it's important for me because of my faith. So that's kind of the advice I would give, John. It's hard, though. It's a hard place to navigate. You know, we are called to make disciples as followers of Christ. And how do you make a disciple in the middle of your workplace, right? You're there to do your job. But again, it really starts with relationships. You know, people aren't going to care. I always say this. People are not going to care about how much you know until they know how much you care. That's in business. That's in faith, religion, life. You can know all that you know and brag about it, but nobody's going to care about all that if they don't think that you actually care about them. And that's why the greatest leaders are not necessarily bosses. Even though bosses might have the title and the status, there's a lot of bosses who don't necessarily care for their employees. They care about themselves and getting the work done. But the greatest leaders, they don't not care about themselves, but they understand the pecking order. Themselves need to be third, and they care about the people that they work with. I'm in a place like that now with Sports Spectrum, and I got to tell you, it's amazing.
Awesome. I appreciate you sharing it. Powerful stuff. The book, of course, is The Uniform of the Leadership, which we're so excited that it's finally out. Tell us, let's end on some fun stuff. You, what's harder, leading at home or leading at work?
Leading at home, I think, because you can get way too comfortable at home. And it's easy for me to focus on, as the dad of a teenage daughter, things that she's doing wrong or watching on TV or just being stuck in her phone And I'm like, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that. My kids probably heard that more from me and my wife than anything else. And that's sad, unfortunately, to say. But the intentionality of A, being present in her life, which I did not have a dad in my life who was present. So I want to be present in her life. But B, to be patient with her and then be purposeful with her. The purpose being to raise her right in my eyes and show her who Christ is in my life. Introduce her to Christ to have her own relationship with him, but also to, and I'm speaking more for my daughter. I'll get to my wife in a second, but it's much harder to lead at home because it's easy for me to focus on the things that she's not doing instead of just praising her for who she is. You know, this amazing kid who is my miracle child, who is my daughter and a princess. And I'm so proud of her, all that she's accomplished, you know, in school and sports and things like that. But it's how she treats people. I watch her around people at church, around people just out in public. And I could handle all the stuff at home if I know that she's out there treating others the way that she would want to be treated. But it's hard because at home you get comfortable. Same with my wife. Like, I am called to be a leader to my family and to love my wife and to serve her. But I don't always want to do that. I always want to love her, but I don't always want to serve her. I want to sit on the couch and watch sports and eat a bunch of potato chips on a Saturday, just like everybody else does. But sometimes I got to put those down and vacuum the living room and, you know, do the dishes and take out the garbage. And my wife is an acts of service wife. So she wants to see me help her in those ways. And that's how she feels love. But that's hard, because it's out of my comfort zone. I just want to tell her I love her and give her a big hug and a kiss, and hopefully she knows that, but she wants to see it. And part of me as a leader is to humble myself and do those things for her. You know, at work, I can instill all the principles that we just described and go in there and just serve my team. And I've seen when you serve your team, how amazingly awesome it is, because everybody else wants to serve too, and suddenly you have this incredible culture. At home, you just kind of get comfortable. And that's and I tell people, comfort is the thief or the enemy to blessing in a lot of ways. Because when we get comfortable, we just kind of sit there, and comfort's nice and comfort feels okay. But it's when we step out of that comfort zone. And even if we're going into a place that we're not sure of, or it's really, really uncomfortable, man, that's where I see in my life the greatest blessings have taken place. And sometimes at home, it's comfortable. And that's the hard part about leading there.
Well, it's a very thoughtful answer. And it's so true in many ways.
It's hard, man. It's really hard.
It is hard. Well, Jason, you're a real gift. We appreciate the work that you're doing. The new book, The Uniform of Leadership, we'll make sure to point people in all the right places. Where can people learn more about you, your work, the book? Let's certainly cover that.
There's a couple places. I mean, the website that I have is probably the best place, because it has my speaking and it has the book and it has a little bit of my story there, the podcast. Just jasonromano.com is my name, which is, again, still weird to say that, you know, your website is your name, but that's where it is. And I am active on social media, on Twitter and Instagram, and would love to connect with anybody who's listening that way. And I'll even give you my email address, jasonromano22@gmail.com is my email. If anybody listening wants to reach out, ask questions, advice, all of that kind of stuff that we've talked about here on today's conversation, John, they can reach me directly at my email. And, you know, but the book is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Books A Million and everywhere you can buy books. Both books actually are available there. And yeah. It's an exciting time. When you release a new book, I mean, that's, you're scared to death and you're excited all at the same time. It's kind of like having a baby, right? And your child comes out and you're like, I'm so happy to be a father. And then you look and you're like, I'm so scared. I have no idea what I'm doing with this child. God so help true. Me. That's where so I true. Am with this book.
And then so the reviews exciting. Start, then the reviews start coming in and you're like,
And listen, I'm a big boy now. I think if I had written books in my 20s and I saw reviews that were like scathing, this book is terrible, whatever. I've never really gotten one of those, but I have gotten a couple. I wouldn't have been able to handle it. It would have crushed
we got a one-star review
on your podcast.
On the book, Building the Best on Amazon. And
did they write the review though, or did they just put one star?
Oh no, they wrote review, and they didn't like the way one of the CEOs handled laying off their people. One of the stories in the book, and and I thought it was the best example of leadership because I've seen how people lay off people, and he did the opposite. And so it's you know, you can get a 5-star and a 1-star back to back, and but it's the important is the courage that you're taking to write it and put it into the world to help people. And we appreciate that, Jason. You're a real gift. You're welcome back anytime.